So I am Scott Hanselman, and this is my good friend Dan Roth, and we're here to introduce you to a preview of ASP.NET Core 2.0. Lots of cool stuff. We'll try to spend as much time in the demos as we possibly can. This is kind of the Return of the Jedi part of the trilogy of Intro to .NET Core, the C-sharp talk that Mads Torgersen did. We are the Return of the Jedi, or the Last Jedi.
We're going to bring it home. We're going to destroy the Death Star.
Exactly. Again. It's not even a Death Star anymore, because there's no Darth Vader. There's just a bunch of stormtroopers pushing buttons randomly, trying not to blow up, trying not to blow up your planet. All right. Little reminder, though, about .NET Standard. Let's review .NET Standard and get an understanding about how that works, okay? People think that .NET Standard is like a framework, like something that you would go and install. What .NET Standard is it's an agreement. It's an interface. It is a series of APIs that allow multiple instances of .NET to all agree on something. Back in the day, for those of us who've been doing .NET for a long time, there was the BCL, or the base class library, and you would get a big book on that and you'd learn it, and that would explain how .NET worked to you. And there was only one .NET, and it was in C:\Windows\Microsoft.net, and you were afraid of it, and you never went into that folder. Now there's lots of .NETs because C-sharp runs everywhere, and you've got games and running in Unity, and you've got iOS and Android and Windows UWP, and you're writing all this great C-sharp and F-sharp and VB. But just like with an Android device, you're not thinking, I'm going to target KitKat and Juicy Fruit and I don't know what the kid, I don't have an Android phone, but I assume that's what they do. You target an API level. So you're going to target the .NET standard, and you're going to do that based on which .NETs you want to support. And if you want to support lots of them, the widest possible support, you might support .NET Standard 1.0 or 1.6, but you have a smaller API surface area, right? If you want to run .NET on an Apple Watch and share your libraries, you might have to pick a smaller one and make sure that that works with the Xamarin tools that you'll get in Visual Studio or Visual Studio for Mac. .NET Standard 2.0 that we talked about when we talked about .NET Core 2.0 has a wider surface area. So I just want to understand that, but the whole point of .NET Standard is you target that and you share your binaries between whatever, client, server, all different flavors, right? And then the runtimes pick those up. So just a little bit of context setting around .NET Standard.
So we support .NET Standard 2.0 in .NET Core 2.0 now.
That makes sense.
We have added a whole bunch of APIs now to .NET Core. Core used to be small. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, whoa, yes, that. Like more than twice the number of APIs. It's pretty awesome.
The goal of this is so that your existing libraries are portable now. They can be brought over to other platforms and be shared in more places.
We now have a binary compatibility story between full desktop framework libraries and .NET Core. You can take full desktop framework libraries and just use them. Like 70% of the libraries that are available on NuGet, they just work. They don't have to change them at all.
So that
really
bigger
cool.
API surface is a great thing. On top of all that sits ASP.NET Core 2.0. So here's kind of like what we're going to talk about. First, we're going to talk about removing paper cuts. Paper cuts are just those little annoying things that you find as you're wandering through your development. Anytime you find yourself repeating yourself, you got to fix those things.
Yep.
We're going to talk about some new exciting ways that we're going to actually extend the ASP.NET application model. We're going to do some cool perf stuff and some cool perf demos.
Oh, yeah. Faster.
And how things light up in Azure. So we will have demo. Look at that. 3 slides and 4 minutes.
We're in.
Boom. Demo.
Should we show them how to get started?
No,
now?
More slides. First.
No, just kidding. All right, let me switch over. Let's do this. So ASP.NET Core 2.0, it's in preview. Like right now, we just pushed it out. Preview 1 of 2.0 is now available. If you want to get the bits, you can get them right now. You should go to, should we use the .NET?
I like .NET.
.NET/core.
I like people to use it because we bought it.
I don't remember. Microsoft.net/net/core/preview. That's the that's
Google
the
with Bing for .NET Core. You will end up here.
That's
though.
Where you want to go.
That's where you want to do.
All right. And you're going to want to install the... There we go. You're going to want to install the .NET Core SDK, .NET Core 2.0 SDK, which is click the button. You're also going to, if you're on Windows, you're going to want to install the latest Visual Studio 2017 preview update.
And an interesting thing about that, because check out his taskbar. Look at that one. It's kind of like penciled in.
A doodle.
That is the released Visual Studio, and that one is like the faded matrix, kind of not quite. It's penciled in. You are actually going to be installing a second instance, a side-by-side. Remember how we said that we made the installer for Visual Studio 2017 a lot lighter weight, a lot smaller? We've allowed you to now have side-by-side installs. So I have the release version of Visual Studio on my machine. It is the release 2017, and it's Community Edition, the free one. And then I've got a side-by-side of the 15.3 preview that is the Enterprise Edition, and they're chilling together, and they take up their own space. Only hard drive is free, right? Disk space is free. So, you know, a couple hundred gigs later, and you're all set.
The point you can...
No, seriously, it's way faster, and what's cool is you can just pick the workloads that make you happy, so it's fast and easy to install.
Works great side-by-side. I do it side-by-side all the time. Okay, so I've installed all those bits already. So if I run, like, I'm going to start at the command line. If I do .NET --- version right now, I can see that I have the 2.0.0 preview one build of the .NET Core 2.0 SDK.
Okay.
So that's what I'm using on my machine. If you're doing 1.1 development and you're like, well, if I install this thing, is it going to mess up my 1.1 development? Don't worry. It's all side-by-side at the SDK and at the runtime layer as well. Like, I can very easily toggle between that version and the 1.1 version. So if I, let me go back to my, I have a global.json file that I have sitting in my user profile. You can too. I'll switch back to the RTM version, the one that's out. I just save that file, go back to the command prompt, .NET version, and it's 104 now. Okay, so they're side-by-side. Don't worry about installing this. You can use both.
Now, I want to point something out, though. He made a little throwaway statement there that was super interesting. That global.json is sitting in his user profile, and he just happens to be in a folder below it. That global.json set the version of .NET from there down. He could have just put that global.json in that folder.
Yeah.
So then if he gave it to a friend or it was checked in, it's pinning that version locally. With the trick that he did is he went it higher up. So he switched it at that level. So it's totally up to you. The point is you're going to get the version that makes you happy and the version that you want. And you can also install templates where when you say .NET new, you can decide whether you want 2.0 or 1.1. So you shouldn't hurt yourself with the preview stuff. And if you don't like it, you uninstall it, clean uninstall.
So I'm using the 2.0 SDK. I'm going to go ahead and create a new ASP.NET Core 2.0 application. Now, the first thing you're going to notice is as soon as I did .NET new, it's actually kicking off a .NET restore for me right away. You don't have to worry about having to run a .NET restore after the fact. So restore is now automatic as part of project creation. So that's nice. That's one less thing that you have to do, that you have to worry about.
And this also gets you thinking about, like, who's the competition, right? How do we teach people how to do .NET now, today? The kids are in school, and they're like, let's learn Node and Ruby and Java and Python and this and that. And then we say, hey, kids, let's learn .NET. Yay! We're going to download a 2-gig ISO, and we're going to install Visual Studio. And then tomorrow, we can get you up and running on .NET 2 in 10 minutes. You're going to go out to the command line. And what do? They make an application called Foo. They type Ruby foo, Python foo, Java foo. Now they type .NET foo. They go .NET new and .NET run, and their app runs.
You're good.
So here,
good to go.
He said .NET new web, and he's got an app running
right now. So if I run, that's going to do a build. It'll actually start up the server, listen on a port.
That's why we're doing that. And the build is implied, and it goes and starts up on localhost.
Let's make sure it's actually doing something.
Competitive browser. And...
Impartial
browser.
Third-party browser.
Impartial third-party
browser.
All right,
so we're saying
hello world.
That's working, okay? Now, this app that I just started, that I created, .NET new web, basically gives you, like, empty. That's the equivalent of empty in Visual Studio. In fact, I'm going to move over to Visual Studio.
It is Hello World HTTP edition.
That's what it is. That's what it is. There's not a bunch of code in this app. This is starting from a blank slate, but... That's actually perfectly fine in the new ASP.NET Core 2.0 world because there's a lot of stuff that you used to have to do manually that we would set up with templates.
Right.
You just don't have to do anymore. Let me show you what I mean.
Quick aside, the fact that he did .NET new at the command line is there to show you that that exists and to show you that the .NET new templates are shared everywhere. For those of you who have a disdain or a dislike for the command line, it's okay. The visual is still in Visual Studio. He just started at the command line. You can do file new project. Same experience.
Same.
Go to a Mac, file a new project, same experience.
It's actually better than that. Like, literally the same templates that we're using with .NET New,
mm-hmm.
those are exactly the same templates that get used in Visual Studio.
Okay,
it's the same template engine.
.NET New is like driving a manual stick car, and Visual Studio is like a Tesla.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got the app now open in Visual Studio. I'm going to use that cool new feature that Casey showed where I can edit my project, my CS proj file right within Visual Studio. And you'll notice that this is super clean. Like, instead of having a whole bunch of packages and different versions, there is now just one package that represents the entire platform, all of ASP.NET Core. ASP.NET Core-all is the last ASP.NET Core package that you will ever need.
Okay.
And there's just one version you have to worry about. It's the version of the product. You don't have to worry about getting all the versions right for each package that make sure that they work with
right,
each other.
Right, because there was a lot of talk about kind of going in that node direction where it was like a cafeteria plan, like a little of this and a little of that, just get the packages you want. How do we have the best of both worlds? Because it's nice to be able to say, I only want that, I don't want any of this other crap. But it's also super inconvenient when the versions all change. It's nice to just go click ASP.NET. But then I'm thinking you're going to make me bring hundreds of megabytes of stuff I don't want.
No. So we've actually done a bunch of good work to make sure that, for example, restore is still going to be super fast because we actually include the packages in a feed with .NET Core. So they're already there. Restore will be quick. When you publish your app, we've done work to make sure that all the ASP.NET Core packages, well, they're already there in .NET Core. We don't need to publish them with the app, so they don't go with the app. Publish is small.
Okay.
Also, if you want to drop down, and you really do want to hand pick your dependencies, you can still do that. There's nothing special, really, about this package. It's literally just a meta package that pulls everything in. If you want to reference individual packages, they're all still there. The factoring, the layering of the stack is still there. We're just trying to make your life super easy, so you can find features, so you can get IntelliSets working quickly without you having to search all over NuGet.org.
Okay, so this is a package of packages, and it's just an easy way to go and do that, and I've got a CS Broad that's only 15 lines of code, 15 lines of XML. It's great.
That's perfect.
All right, cool.
So startup in this app is empty. It's very clean. There's not much here. All it's doing is saying run and return hello world. One of the cool things we've done in ASP.NET Core 2.0 is we wanted to reduce the amount of ceremony and manual wire up that you have to do to get your app up and going. For example, configuration. Today, in a lot of our templates, we'll set up a config builder and add a bunch of config sources for you, like a JSON file, an environment-specific JSON file, environment variables.
I mean, it's nice if you want that level of detail and that kind of power.
Yeah, and it was always there in the template. It's so common, we felt we can build a convention around that. Also, you know, a lot of people need config. Let's just add config to the host. Let's make it a first-class thing in the stack. So configuration is now something that gets introduced by the ASP.NET Core host. And it's in DI. You can just resolve it straight out of the container. I'll show you what I mean. Let me add a constructor in here. And I'm just going to take in iConfiguration directly. So namespace, config. And let's add a little property so we can capture it and use it later.
You type fast.
Yeah, too fast, apparently. All right, here we go.
That's good. See, I just messed you up by telling you that you type fast.
Thank you, Scott.
Everyone's watching.
Let's get the config set up. All right, and that's it. Because the host has already put config in DI for you. You may be asking, well, how do I change it? How do I add additional config sources? How do I configure my configuration? Well, now you do it at the host layer. So you go into your program CS file, and you do it when you're setting up the host. This is the new pattern that we're using in program CS now for building up the web host that is your app. There's your use startup. That's the startup class I want to use. And we're just saying run. If I want to set up configuration, you do it off of your web host builder. You would say configure. I love this name. It actually originally was configure configuration. It literally was originally that name. And we're like, maybe not. So configure app configuration is what we settled on. And here you get a context. And you get the config builder. That's the builder you want.
Got a couple extra parentheses there. No?
I don't think so.
I
think
you're doing a tuple.
Yeah, so builder. And then there's all my, let me zoom in so using this trick that Scott's been treating me, like all the config providers that I want, user secrets, JSON files, XML files, they're all right there. Okay, so that's how you set up your configuration now. But you don't actually have to, like if I wanted to add a JSON file, right, I would do add JSON file and app settings, whatever.
Right, whatever.
But you actually don't have to do this at all. I don't know if you noticed that line of code beforehand, but there's this line of code that says create a default web host builder for me. That default will actually wire all that up for you. It'll add the app settings.json config file. It'll say use Kestrel. It will add IIS integration for you. It'll set up logging, like the debug logger, the console logger.
Well, because
logger.
In the previous one, that was a stack of add IIS, add app insights, add config file, and it started to become this pile of stuff.
Of things that you had to do to get going. You no longer have to do any of that manually. We'll just do it for you.
There are a couple of things that you said that went really fast, and I want to back up a second and parse them, if that's okay. Maybe people will appreciate that. First, he said DI. I'm going to keep throwing it in DI and DI. Go back to your startup. He expressed there on line 15, I want a configuration, an I configuration, and he expressed that to the system by simply having it in his constructor. By having it in his constructor, he is saying to ASP.NET, make me one of those. Notice that he didn't new it up. In nowhere does it say configuration equals new configuration. He just said, I want that. And he could add other things if he wanted hosting environments and other information that's out there in the system. You could just express a need and it gets put in there.
And it just gets given, it's injected.
It's injected into the system. So that's really important because then you can mock that away if you want to. So the second thing you said was web host.
Yeah.
The web host. Remember that when he went out to the command line and he said .NET new and then .NET run, there's no exe. .NET was the exe. His app is a DLL. The host hosted his web application and then brought up Kestrel, and then Kestrel is the little tiny web server we'll talk about. And then that web host knew all kinds of stuff. It had all that context. That web host is encapsulated within that.
Started getting requests in. That's the web host part of your app. It's just a console app, but the web host is the thing that actually starts the server, starts getting requests, and pumping them up into your startup class.
Right. And you'll notice, of course, even though this is an ASP.NET app, it has a main, right? If it was a hello world, it would say console.writeline hello world.
Yep.
Here it says web host, default builder. This can be anything. It could be foo, but it is. We called it startup for that one. And then you make it, and then it goes, right?
That's right. That's
cool.
What you do.
All right.
So that create default builder is doing a bunch of goodness for me, so I don't have to manually set up configuration to open a file. So let's just add a config file. Let's add a new item. And I'm going to add some config data to my app.
That's cool that it's just a add file. It's a default template for config file.
Yeah, we have a bunch of nice default templates for ASP.NET Core. That config file, though, as you can tell, is a difficult piece of processing for.
Did it actually work?
I think so. Like it's thinking of it, it's like, wow.
It's a
preview.
You
want a
what
config
is it doing?
File? Let me. That's going to take some JSON, man.
It's trying to like, pretend like it's Outlook. What's going on here?
I don't know. The initial light. There we go. So
this
is an
good
impressive
night,
JSON file. It's very, very expensive. It's this connection string,
if that
I'm guessing.
Was six
that's
lines,
causing.
That
let's
been,
get rid of that connection string, because obviously that's causing problems.
Afterwards.
All right, I'm just going to add some config data in here. Hello, build. There, okay, so now we just have a config.
So that's just a name value pair.
Just a name value pair. Happens to be in JSON format, could be whatever
now,
format you like.
I'm old, so I do angle brackets. He's young, and he does curly braces. You can do either, right? And if you're really old, you can do any files.
Yeah.
It's name value pairs. It's whatever makes you happy.
We had a dev manager that felt really strongly that needed to be there.
Any file support.
The point is,
though, a name value pair configuration store is required. Any files, JSON, XML, Access database, whatever makes you happy is what it's about. And in that case there, he just said message. Or it could be, and then your config for your database could be there, too, if you wanted. You can have as many of those as you want, too.
Yeah.
Or environment variables.
Environment variables.
Name, value, pair.
So let me run this. So you can see that I added a little bit of code now to pull the message that this Hello World app is going to spit out. Added a little line of code that will pull that out of config now.
Cool.
Supposedly, if DI is working, when we go to our third-party impartial browser, we should see Hello Build. Yeah, so we got Hello Build. So that's config in DI. And that is really game-changing, because that means a lot of the things that we do in the stack, we can now depend on DI being there, dependency injection. For example, logging now. Logging used to be something that you manually wired up in startup. The only thing that really supported a config model for changing the log level was the console logger.
Mm-hmm.
Now that config's in DI from the host, we can configure all of our logging providers using the config model.
Does that mean that you can change that and not have to recompile the app?
That is absolutely possible to do with the config system. But you'd have to like set up a manual reload. Like if you want,
you'd have to notice it changing.
Yeah, you have to notice it changing.
But if you started it over again, it would pick it up.
It would absolutely pick it up on the next run.
Very cool.
So let's add some like log. I don't know if you noticed. I'll have to show you again. Like there were all these debug logs that were coming out when I ran. I see debug. Like the default log level is pretty verbose right now. Let's change that. So I'm going to add some logging configuration. Let's say logging. And that's I think it's the log level that I want to change. And let's change the default. Instead of being debug or whatever it is by default, let's change it to information. And I save that, and I'm going to rerun the app again. Now all those debug logs should go away. Good, looks much cleaner. If I refresh the application and go back, you can see I'm getting info level log traces, but none of those debug level, verbose level log traces.
Let me zoom in a little bit. Okay, so info colon was added by the logger.
Info was already there, but you were also getting debug, you were getting trace, you were getting like everything. Like, I don't want all that. Let's just filter to just information and above. Those are the only things I want to see. That's what that just did.
Cool.
So that's configuring logging. What else can we configure? We can configure our Kestrel endpoints. Like, what port do I want to listen on? So let's configure Kestrel.
Kestrel is the name of the tiny web server. Okay? Just like when you have a Node app and you type node and then node.exe is listening on a port, and then you put that behind another web server, where that server's job is to make the pages, and then there's something else that sits in front of it, like Apache or Nginx or IIS. Kestrel is the name of our tiny cross-platform web server.
So let's make this guy now listen on localhost on 50,001. Let's just say 5,001.
Okay.
I think I got that right. So this is Kestrel. These are all my endpoints. I'm naming this endpoint, so I can give it a name. This one's going to just be called localhost, and then saying this is the address and port that I want you to listen on. We should now see that in the console output. So now you see I'm on 127.0.0.1, 5,001. Okay. So if I go to the old address, it's probably going to be nothing there. If I change it to 5,001. I'm now listening on the new port, okay? And you can even configure like SSL, like HTTPS. Like mm-hmm. you want this app to be secure, we support setting up HTTPS at the Kestrel layer, like right up against your application.
One thing I want to add about the configuration is that it can be layered. So you can get your configuration from a file and then say, unless it is in the environment, and then I want that to override what was in the file. So locally here, he has set it to 5,001. But if you put it up into Azure or some other host, he could then express that string and say, I want that to come at this port. And that would allow him to spin up as many of these as he wants, or even host his own Kestrel inside of a Windows service. So all kinds of possibilities are opened up by this flexibility.
To set up HTTPS, all you have to do is configure a certificate. We have a certificate that we include with Visual Studio. It's the IIS Express development certificate. So I'm just going to wire that up. So it's going to come from a certificate store. The store location is...
You're doing this from... I'm looking for notes. He's doing this entirely from memory, which is awesome.
I mean, it's obvious. This stuff is...
looking for notes.
And the store name is going to be, you know, my... and then I think, is that... Oh, I need the subject name. Like, which cert do I actually want to use from that store? So subject...
These are the certs that you go to see in Cert Manager, right? In certmgr.msc. He's just pulling the one that is already installed with IIS Express. He's saying, hey, I got an SSL cert lying around already. I'll pick that one up.
Okay.
But IIS isn't involved here. He's just borrowing the cert.
So I think I did that right. Let's see. Oh, you notice? I'm now listening on...
Hey, zoom in.
Oh, zoom in.
Zooming is so important.
We have a...
Window plus.
So we're getting...
So you're listening simultaneously on two different ports.
I think it found it. It says before. It's HTTP. Let me see if I can fix that. So it's a port, store, local machine... My CN localhost.
Go to your notes.
Yeah, I think that's pretty sure. That's, oh, notes. Certificate.
Certificate.
Who needs notes? Like, seriously.
It's not plural.
Yeah. Yes!
Zoom in.
You see the HBS?
I love that you're excited.
HBS. All I did was add a certificate. Okay, let's make sure it's actually working. Like, can I go there? Like, okay, HBS localhost. Who remembers the port? It was 44333, I think. Yeah. Oh, yeah!
Not secure!
I mean, so this is a development certificate.
No, it's not supposed to be secure.
And you don't obviously want it to deploy this thing. Like, this certificate is a certificate you'd only want to use on your dev machine. So actually...
But it lets you test all your URLs, right? As you're going to go and do secure logins and the regular HTTP to secure switches as you go back and forth.
So actually, let's set this up to not use that cert in the production environment. Let's only use this cert in development. Like, that cert should only be there when I'm in the development environment. In ASP.NET Core, we have this first-class notion of environments. You set it with an environment variable to say,
now,
I'm running production.
While
running
he's doing that, we want to remind ourselves about the relationship between a tiny web server like Kestrel and IIS or Apache or another one. If you have your secure traffic going all the way into IIS, which does your static pages, and it also starts your host up, it keeps your processes running. It's a component container that keeps your website running. It then proxies that traffic or reverse proxies that traffic to n number of Kestrels. You want that secure traffic to be secure all the way. You don't want it to terminate at IIS and then have the last hop be, You really want it to be secure all the way. And HTTPS everywhere is becoming an important thing that we don't want to forget. So he's made an appsettings.development or appsettings.environment name, where environment name might be development or staging or production or whatever. Whatever makes you happy. It's not hard-coded.
Development's convenient because it signals the development environment. I changed the production config file now to say, I want a certificate, and I gave it a name. Use the HTTPS certificate. And then you can define your certificates in a central place, like in a top-level certificates node, and give them names, and then they get referenced from there. But I'm only doing that in the development environment, not in production. If I run this now, I get an exception. It says,
crash.
Yeah,
what is the exception? That was supposed to happen.
It was supposed to happen, but I want to be able to actually see the exception. Let's see if I can get
there. Go faster.
Okay, so it says,
unable to configure HTTPS
endpoint. No certificate named HTTPS was found in configuration for the current environment production.
Production.
By default, we assume that it's production. You're only in development if you actually explicitly say, I'm in development. So let me go do that.
This is a really important point about ASP.NET in general. We're trying to assume secure by default, not giving you everything by default, not turning everything on by default. So it's a balance, right? We don't want to go and see yellow screens of death, or I think it's light blue, baby blue,
light blue
screen of death.
It's grayish.
It's a kinder, gentler screen of death. You don't want to see those in production anymore, so you set the system up where it's production by default, and then you have to go and turn on the features that you want.
So to set the environment, you just set an environment variable. VS has this nice feature where when it launches the process, you can say whatever environment variables you want to set. So I'm doing that and saying the environment is development. And now if I run it again, we should see our ports and addresses, and boom, we're good. So there we go.
Just to be clear, zoom in, development. Now, that hosting environment development is really important because now he has that everywhere, and he could go and say, well, use full CSS when I'm in development, use squished or minified CSS in production, use this certificate in development, use that in production. All the different things that one might want to do as they move dev, test, staging, etc.
Okay, so now, I mean, the UI obviously is a little bit too desired
application. And to be clear, you didn't go file new company.
Right.
You didn't file new empty, so you got nothing by default.
Nothing by default. I believe I need to do some MVC stuff to get some UI. I'm garbage at UI. I hope you can help me out here. I know I need MVC, so I need some controllers
and
some
and
views
and
there's some folders.
So you
like,
might as well just start all over again.
Can you do that?
What I think that you should do is you should try the new stuff. You should try the new stuff. Let me show you a slide
with a picture
of some new stuff. Which button does slides? Which one's the clicker thing? That looks like it came from the 80s. All right. Cool. So we've been unifying the web stack, right? We've been moving us where in ASP.NET Core 1.0, Web API, which was its own thing, and MVC, which was its own thing. Remember, there was the controller-based class and then the API controller-based class. They were unified. In ASP.NET Core 2, we're bringing in a new thing called Razor Pages, except we're doing it in this super awesome way, which makes me so excited about it, because rather than making another model, if you recall a while back, we did this other amazing thing that was called Web Pages, but it was its own thing. There was MVC, there was Web API, and then there was Web Pages, and there was me and Damien and I think Rob Connery, and that was the only people who cared about Web Pages, and we loved it. Mads Christensen loved it too.
Mads loves it too, yes.
Why not have that single page model, but have it be part of the ASP.NET experience, where it's already MVC, where it fits in? We don't want to invent a new model. We want to use or leverage the existing model. So we're unifying that. I'm going to show you what that looks like in a second. And then as we move forward, we could bring in potentially other things for
the future into Sigma one R. unified model, which is hot.
Sigma R.
So let's talk about the magic and the glory and the wonder and the button. What do I push? 7? That is, raise your pages. Okay. This is like someone else's mouse. I feel like Novocaine hands because I don't recognize this computer. I've never seen this mouse before.
Yeah.
It's like too fast. You ever feel someone's like mouse? And it's like, your mouse is too fast. I can't reach. I feel it. Get my glasses. All right, I'm going to make.
I don't have this beautiful.
It's a Surface Book.
Surface
it's magical.
Book thing. Like,
it's the ultimate laptop. I'm going to go and make a new folder called Pages.
Okay.
And I'm going to say new item. Okay, and there's a million different items that you can make here. I only want one. Where did you say it was?
I think it's in the middle someplace. No,
in
don't do that.
In the middle somewhere?
You'll find it.
It's so complicated.
Yeah, web.
Razor page.
Razor page.
And we'll call it awesome. All right. So now, inside the folder called pages is a thing called awesome.cshtml. It's not a view. It's a razor page. Okay?
Page.
Razor page.
Razor page.
And it has this at page on the top of it here, and then a little section here where I can do some stuff, and then I could, you know, go and say awesome. And then let's run your thing again. Build started. Running the thing.
It's 5001, I
think. 5001.
I messed with the
cord,
sorry.
Now?
That's gonna. We could do reverse SSL.
Okay.
Oh,
I gotta do. Oh, what are you doing, man?
I know.
5001.
But you have HTTPS.
HTTPS.
Yeah,
it's so complicated.
It's two ports, like.
I'm Googling for localhost now. I don't know what's. What is happening? Maybe you should be driving this. I don't know what's going on. I'm freaking out.
Is it
5001?
Yeah.
I don't think your thing is running the way it should be running. Awesome.
There's awesome.
Okay. Wait. So let's talk about that.
Isn't that just like a static HTML file? Like,
no, it's a razor page.
Razor?
So what we're doing here is we've got a page where instead of having a controller and a model and a view separately, it's just one thing. And the folder called pages is by default the magic folder. By putting the file in there called awesome, that now became at /awesome. Okay? I know, it'll blow your mind.
Much easier.
It's awesome. Now, the point is not to say stop using MVC or stop doing this. It's like sometimes you're writing an app and you need a page. And then it's like, okay, make a controller, have a bunch of empty crap that doesn't really do anything, have an index, return a view model, right? For those kind of pages, you don't do this, right? So let me go and let's look at a less stupid example. 6.
Some real UI.
So check it out. Razor Pages is awesome. Okay. So it's MVC. It already is MVC. Like, it's the same model. He said use MVC and add MVC in his startup.
Yeah, that's true. I did.
You didn't say anything about Razor Pages. So
no.
You already have it by default.
So it's kind of part of MVC. It's built on MVC.
Because it's not built. It is MVC.
It is MVC.
It is itself
Razor
MVC.
Razor Pages is MVC.
Right. So sometimes you just say, hey, I just need a folder. I just need a page. So here's an example. Let's take a look at this. Here's one called index. I just made a folder called pages. And I made my index.html. I got the same view data as before. I got nothing. Like at this point, like, okay, this is stupid. Why do I need this at all? Well,
it's dynamic. Like,
it's dynamic,
compiling,
right? So let's look at an example. This is through the exact same page. I'm going to show you two of them. Here's an inline page model. So this is new, edit, and a list. You know, a CRUD. It's CRUD. Create, read, update, delete. CRUD. And I'm going to open up index and check it out.
Functions.
Yeah. So notice that there's no namespace there. I just said I want to go and have this page model, and it talks to the database. It's got a couple of publics, and then it goes right into the page.
So there's the HTML. This is just like the code
for
the page.
But let's look at it in another way that's even easier.
Yeah, I don't know. Like having all that code in my page, isn't that like, shouldn't it be separate somehow? Like some people don't like mixing their code with their
view. So look at this. Oh. I don't even have a class at that point. Now I just say at functions, and I just start going.
Okay.
But it's C#, it's Razor, it's stuff that you already know, it's fast, and it's self-contained. It's a page model for MVC. So here, I've just got an application that is going to go and have a list of customers. It's going to go and do on a get. Here I'm saying on verb, on get, on post, on put. Go and talk to the database, and then return the page. Or on post, where we're going to go and delete or do whatever we want to a customer, and then redirect to the page.
Sweet.
And then you're in the page. And what's cool about it, because it's already MVC, you've got the tag helpers that you already use, the Razor that you already know how to do.
Oh, yeah.
And look at that, even the if there, see? TR ASP-if. And then you go and say, well, I'm only going to show that customers.count, all on a single page. The point, though, is that you can drop this into your MVC applications, because it's already MVC. It's in the pipeline already. Make a folder called pages, drop a page in there.
So you can have controllers, you got views, like the old like normal MVC, and then you can have pages, and they just work.
And it just works, because it's part of the experience. And
That's nice.
You don't like the way that routes, if you want to have a different folder or change the routing yourself, totally up to you. Let me show you what it looks like in reality, and we'll see if we can coax the people into excitement, because I don't feel like I'm doing it effectively right now, because I think it's freaking awesome.
Well, let me get this straight, though. Like, we were trying to start get started. So I need the program CS file. I need a startup class to get going.
You went
and then
you said new project web.
Yeah.
You got a startup, like two lines of code, and then there's two options. You could say make a controllers folder, make a models folder, make a views folder, populate it with those things, and then hello world. Or you could make a pages folder
and put
a page in it.
Just add a page.
Just add a page and then start writing.
So
think
three,
about this
four files.
From a learning perspective, this is great. Then if you start saying, you know, I've outgrown pages, you don't move to MVC. You just move things to a different way of thinking. The Razor page exists. It can become a view. The code that you had in functions can go into a controller. And the models can change the way that you want to. So look at this. Here is customers. Create. Make a new customer. Look at the URL. Right? Pages is implied.
So the customers was the folder, and this is the name of the page. Yeah.
Scott Hansman, save. New customer, create. Dan Roth, save. If I hit edit. Okay. So how would that have worked before, right? There would be different things going on in a controller. You'd have to go and set up routing.
Set up routing, you need like two actions, the get action, the post action. You would need the view for the get, the view for the form.
Yep.
So
instead, let's look at edit. So at the top, it says at page. There's that int. Remember how we said /edit/ and a number? That's that route right there. You know how to do this stuff already. This has got a series of great shorthands inside of Razor that you already know how to do. Then if I go and post that customer, we model bind the property.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay, now look, bind property customer, that means later on, I can refer to it, see? Customer.id and customer.name. So there's just those times when you're writing your app and you just go, you know, MVC is kind of overkill. My website for my podcast called Hansel Minutes, it's a 30-minute podcast, is too ASP.NET web pages from back in the day, because it just seemed like overkill for what I wanted to do. I wanted a page model, but I wished MVC would do that, and now it does. And this lets me move freely between them. This isn't a, you know, start with Razor and move to MVC, or start with MVC and back off to Razor. This is use ASP.NET, and you can go page model, you can have inline models, you can have separate code behind models. It's totally up to you how you want to do it. All the tag helpers work because it's ASP.NET. All the model binding work because it's ASP.NET. All the DI and dependency injection stuff happens automatically. If I want to go and inject something, I just say at inject, and now it's
right
available to my page.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you feel good about this? This gentleman feels good. There's 1,000 people
smiling.
In the room. Only he has nodded, which means I want to know if it's okay.
This is going to make it really easy for me to get started. Like when I want to just get some UI,
exactly.
Add a page.
So you can go and check this out. If you want to install Visual Studio, you can check it out and file a new project. Or if you just want to look at the code, go to Damian Edwards' GitHub. And he's got a great Razor Pages sample application. You can just read that code and look at the different ways that you can do that. It's really powerful. I am deeply excited about this because I didn't want them to tack on a new model. I wanted to use the same model in a way that works for me. And for my little applications that I make, like my podcast, it's perfect. It's fantastic. And it's going to make it also easier as an educator for me to teach someone how to make a web page. To go and say, file new project, hello world. And now let's talk about models and views and controllers and all this kind of stuff. This is a perfect entree, which gives you the full speed and the full power of C Sharp and C Sharp 7 and 7.1. Because it is C Sharp. It's not an addition to MVC. It is MVC because it's part of ASP.NET. All right, are you feeling good?
I'm feeling good.
All right, so let's switch over to you, sir.
Let's talk about speed.
Let's talk about where did
performance.
This clicky thing go? Clicky thing.
Yeah.
Click, performance.
Performance.
That was all the value that I had right
go
there.
Go ahead and click again. Let's talk about speed. So when we shipped ASP.NET Core 1.0,
mm-hmm.
This was the fastest web stack that we've ever shipped with .NET. Like we benchmarked it in a public benchmark against all the other stacks pretty much on the planet, like in that benchmark. And the Tech and Power Round 13 plain text benchmark, we were in the top 10 for throughput numbers. Like right up there with native stacks that are written in C++ or Go. Right up at the top, fastest stack we've ever shipped on the cloud version. That was on physical hardware. On the cloud version, we're in the top 15. And ASP.NET Core 2.0 is even faster. Like these are the numbers that we're currently getting with the 2.0 bits. There have been performance improvements up and down the stack. Like we partner, of course, very closely with our friends on the .NET team. They've made improvements to the jitter, to the thread pool. We've done optimizations in Kestrel and up and down the stack. And we're now seeing about 25% throughput improvement. These numbers are for the cloud-based Tech and Power benchmark. Literally the same benchmark.
And you can go and look at the benchmarks if you go to github.com/ASPNet. There's a benchmarks section. It's all open source. It's all done in the open. You can run those yourself if it makes you happy.
But it's not just about throughput. Like we know throughput is not the only perf number that we care about. Mm-hmm. Startup is also something that is important for people. How fast can the app start up? So I have two apps here. This is the startup app written in 1.1 and a startup app written in 2.0. Let me show you what these apps do. They're really simple. They're just the default MVC template for both versions, and then in their program CS file, they wait for the host to start. At the first line of code in the app, it starts a stopwatch, and then it waits to see how long does it take to make an HTTP request to the page, get the HTML back, and then stop the stopwatch. So it's a measurement of the startup time. But the 2.0 app looks exactly the same. It's just using the 2.0 model for actually setting up the host. But otherwise, it's just making an HTTP request to the MVC view.
This is important, because speed isn't just about how much HTTP you can pump out on the wire.
OK, so let's go to the 1.1 version, and let's do .NET, and let's run the, I have the published version of the app.
So ordinarily, you can say .NET run. That compiles it and runs it. He is going to go and .NET on the DLL.
So I've already done a .NET publish to build the DLL and do all the publishing gestures. And that took a long time. It was like seven seconds. That was cold. If we let it warm up a little bit, we're getting down to three seconds.
That's OK.
3 seconds.
A laptop. It's not a Surface Book.
Yeah, we're going up a little. So we're about three and a half seconds on my little laptop machine. Let's now look at what we get.
That was 1.1.
That was 1.1. Okay. Let's go to 2.0. So .NET, and again, I have the published version.
Also a nice example here where he's using that .NET driver at the command line. He's just typing .NET. He doesn't have to remember 50 different things. He just uses .NET.
3/4 of a second.
Wow, okay, so that already did it. I thought I would be able to talk while it was starting up.
No, it's already up.
It's already going.
So how did we do this? We've done a couple of things. We have a runtime store now that ships with .NET Core that includes all of ASP.NET Core in it. That runtime store has already been cross-gen, so the JIT
cross-gen.
Cross-gen.
What does that mean? That sounds
important.
That's
the That's the more flexible version of like engineering assembly, doing the translation from the IL to the actual native.
So they're native. They're native now. It's that moment when your Windows machine decides it's time to start native generating. It's done already.
Most of that work has already been done. That's one thing. And then we also on publish we've enabled view pre-compilation by default. So all the views in the app have been pre-compiled into an assembly. They don't have to be compiled on the fly, which of course takes a bunch of time on startup.
Nice. From 7 seconds to less than a second. Nice.
Other thing that's interesting is the size of these published apps. If we go and look at the output of that published folder, this is the 1.1 version on your left. And you can see I have all the ASP.NET Core 1.1 assemblies sitting with the app. In 2.0, you don't need all of that because it's already part of the runtime. So all you have is your app assembly, and then there's the precompiled views folder. That's all you get. If we compare the size, this guy is what, like, I don't know, 14, 16 megs of stuff. The 2.0 version is going to be just, you know, under
3 megs.
So much smaller deploy times as well. So that's a big
nice.
Thing. Clicky click.
What do you want? Oh, click.
Click, click. Azure. We talk about Azure.
Okay, cool.
All right. So we've done a lot of work in the framework to make it better, fun, you know, easier to get started, make it faster, make it stronger. But we also think that there's a really compelling story to be told. That if you combine, use that framework with services, you can get a really seamless and great story. Mm-hmm. And so we've tried to make ASP.NET Core even better when you use it with cloud services. So a couple things. For example, diagnostics and telemetry.
Right.
You saw this in Hunter's demo earlier today, that you can now take an ASP.NET Core app. I've got one here. I'll just
you drop it into the cloud and it lights up. You don't have to add a bunch of extensions. You don't have to add a bunch of NuGet packages. It just simply knows that it's in the cloud and then it gives you the diagnostics that you want.
I mean, it's actually even better than that. Like what we do in ASP.NET Core is we have this host light up feature where the environment can inject services into the app for you. And give value-add services for your app just by virtue of running in that environment. So not only can you get those services in Azure, like we've done the work to light up like App Insights in Azure if you've checked the checkbox that you want it, but you can also do it within VS. Like I have this simple little app here. This is a
Fancy Pants
app. This is a an app that just downloads a bunch of really cool images from Curiosity from NASA. Let's take a look at it. It's just mostly just going to be a bunch of images. Let's see.
Space images. Which
space
makes it,
images
makes it better.
Of Mars. Wait, look at this. This is cool. This is like NASA is just
NASA is the bomb.
Really cool stuff. I'm gonna get some color ones.
Okay, so you're on the local host and you're going and getting that stuff. So you got a bunch of cool images.
It's randomly just pulling down different sols, different days on NASA and pulling down the images. So it's making an outbound HTTP request and I'm running it, did I F5? I think I did control F5.
Yeah.
Let me actually run it in the debugger now. When I run it in the debugger within VS, VS also uses host lightup to wire up all the app insights goodness within Visual Studio. So no change to my code. Like if we look at Fancy Pants, there's nothing in the program CS file that says app insights anything. There's nothing in my startup CS file that says app insights anything. There's nothing in my views.
Yep.
It just gets injected for me. So it's up and running now. Now if we look at the diagnostics tools, for example, for starters, you can see all these App Insights events are firing off. Like I can see requests being executed, tag helper components. Make it bigger? Is that?
Yes, I.
And then maybe do that thing that you say to do. Yeah.
There you go.
And I guess I can see the GET request. I can view details. That's sort of a summary view in the diagnostics page. If I hop out of this and then click the App Insights button, then you get this really cool search interface where if we filter down, let's look at just the requests. Let me run that, and you see there's my GET request. I can drill in over here and track the operation, and I get like a breakdown. See how it's like showing me every step of what's happening over the process of that request? That's pretty cool. If I unfilter, you'll notice that it's picking up dependencies for you. If I click those guys, you can see it knows about the outbound requests that I'm making
to
NASA.
Yeah, zoom in on that. It noticed that he's leaving his application. He's making an external call. This is the thing that makes that application insights map, that gives you the sense of when your application talks to SQL or talks to NoSQL or talks to an external place. And then in the old days, we had to go and say, debug.writeline, got here, got here, got here. It's doing that.
It's doing that
in the cloud for us completely, and then tells you how many milliseconds it took, and you can go and query it.
We're actually using the logging infrastructure of ASP.NET Core to do this, so you can see all the categories of ASP.NET Core
without you having to do anything.
You can filter them, and it's all this. That's something you can use during development, just like you can use the stuff that Scott showed in production in Azure.
And this can be put in a local only mode. Nothing is sent to the cloud. You have absolute control over what is being sent around. So to be clear, you can go and say enable App Insights SDK local only. And nothing gets sent to the cloud, and you still get that great experience.
So this is the cloud version of this application. It's deployed to an Azure App Service. You can see that the address now is fancypants@azurewebsites.net. If we go to the portal and look at that actual App Service, you'll see the light up experience that you get. Like, this is the App Service. In a second, there'll be a bar that pops up at the top and says, "Hey, would you like some Azure App Insights for your ASP.NET Core application?" We know it's an ASP.NET Core application. We know how to hook into that. That sounds good. I've already done that for this application, so we already get all that data that you saw previously with the application map and all the logging and telemetry. But the thing I wanted to show you is how this is actually working, because this just blows my mind. Like, this is the app, right? If I F12 and go into
the
DOM
Explorer. You're way too geeked about this feature.
This is amazing. Like, I was like, how are you going to do this part? Like, if you look in the head of the app deployed to Azure, there's nothing changed in the code on my side, but there is the JavaScript being injected somehow for App Insights.
And that little bit of JavaScript lets you catch all of those client-side dependencies. So when you have an Ajax app or an Angular app that's doing things client-side, we'll go and grab that. So you can get an experience of the timeline from the moment your page loads all the way until it hits a database or a back-end web service
without
you having to do anything.
The way that works, I actually asked, how did you do that? And the way they do it is there are head and body tag helpers for those parts of the pages. And those tag helpers know how to append content to the page based off of services that have been added through DI, through dependency injection.
Yep.
So all App Insights has to do is add their services into the container that say, I know how to add some JavaScript, please tack me on to the head, and then they can inject it in. It's super sweet. That's amazing stuff. All right, so that's ASP.NET Core better with Azure App Insights. There's also security. Like, security is important. We want to make our apps more secure. We have done integration also with Azure Active Directory B2C, which is a new identity service.
B2C.
Azure
Business
Active Directory
to B2C. Consumer.
Business to consumer. So if you haven't heard about Azure AD B2C, is the shorter form of
that. Are you really going to go ahead and
Azure AD B2C.
Azure B2C.
A great name.
Azure Active Directory, business to consumer.
So it's a identity in the cloud solution for doing user logins with social logins, two-factor authentication. They have artificial intelligence that protects you against brute force attacks. It's basically identity as a service.
Okay, so I have Azure AD, I have Hanselman.com. And I have Azure Active Directory, which is basically my family can log into Office 365 and do stuff like that. But then I have my blog, which is not for my family, it's for the people. And people log into Twitter or whatever, and they log into social, or they have it log into my own application level stuff. So that's Azure AD, which is for things like Office. Azure AD B2C, where the consumer is the blog reader, or in my case, the application consumer.
The way we normally pitch it is Azure AD is for organizations, for schools, your corporate login that you use at work.
Okay, corporate
login.
That's
Azure AD.
That's cool.
Azure AD B2C is you're going to some company website where you have your own username and login.
Shopping carts and stuff, yeah.
It's the same thing that we would normally use ASP.NET Core Identity for.
It's the accounts folder.
Yes.
That when you go file a new project and you say, I want auth.
Yep.
There's that option, right?
So when you go and create a template now, when you say I would like individual user accounts, business to consumer accounts, go ahead. You now have two options. You can say, I would like you to store the accounts in my app. That's the ASP.NET Core identity option.
And it makes a little SQL Server database or whatever, and then you're off and running.
Yep.
You have total control.
Or you can say, do it in the cloud. Just do it for me. I don't want to have to mess with all that security code. Just use it as a service. So you go to the portal. You set up Azure AD B2C there, you create an app, and then you copy in your parameters that you need here, and then we will set up the app for you to talk to Azure AD B2C for your logins.
Okay, so I may still have a database for my shopping cart, but my identity database is now outsourced. I've went to software as a service for that identity database.
So let me show you an example app that I've already set up that does that.
Cool.
And so this app actually does a few things. So this is my identity swap.
Right, and there's no accounts folder there.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to need that, actually. So let me add it back.
Do you need that?
I do for the first part of this demo. Let me just quickly pop
it back in.
Oh my goodness.
Are you okay? I assume you know what you're doing.
Do you want me to show slides while you do that? Yeah, actually, so what we're going to show, I'll talk to it while you show the slides, because we're
Well, you do it. I'll do this. You trust me.
Yeah, I trust you.
So right now, you go file a new project, and you want your accounts stored locally, right? You have your application store, and you have your identity store. And you remember how you get the home controller and the account controller, and you look in the account controller, and you go, that's scary, and then you never go in there again. Right? We've all been there. What he's saying that you do is you separate those things, right? And then, what if you took that bottom part, the accounts controller, the logins, the register, and all that stuff, what, is a good thing happen or bad
it's
thing
good,
happen?
It's good, we're good.
Oh, then let me do this thing here.
Yeah, good.
Okay, and you swap that out, and you let that get handled by the cloud. So all you're doing is you're swapping out the slash accounts, login, register, let that be software as a service.
Crap. Maybe not so good.
Because right now, you're already doing that in the sense of Google, or Twitter, or Windows Live logins. You're just getting rid of that login page. And then all the token work, all the security work is getting handled by that, and you don't have to think about it anymore. Okay, let's go back and see what he's got. Six?
Seven. What on earth?
All right, cool.
What just happened here?
You good?
Sure.
That's not a confidence building thing.
Let's get it back running and building now. Okay, so this app.
It compiled, it'll be okay.
We're gonna start with file new project with identity in the app. With the normal identity service stuff that we've always done. ASP.NET Core identity support
that we've always done.
But like you said, we've factored it away into a folder. Like we've wrapped it in a service layer.
So it's easily factored out if you need to.
And it's just using standard protocols, OpenID Connect, with the app itself in order to get your identity. So it's kind of like a little mini identity service in your application. So I'm going to log in.
All local.
All local.
So this is all local right now.
So I'm going to log in, and I'm going to use ASP.NET Core Identity. So this looks normal. Right?
Yeah, we've all seen this before.
Do a normal login and type in my password. Okay, so I've logged in. And I can
magical.
Manage my account and all that
Truly
kind of stuff.
Truly magical.
Sign out. Okay, now I'm going to leave the app running. I'm not going to...
And leave it running?
Now
you're just showing off.
And now that areas folder, which I was using for that login page, which I needed, let's get rid of it. Like, I don't want any more. I don't want it anymore.
Well, I don't think the intent is for people to delete this in production. Like,
not in production.
What you're doing
no.
is, it's very showy, but don't do this.
But, you know, initially, maybe, like, I didn't want to use cloud initially. But at some later point down the line, I'd like to. We've set up your templates, your project, so that if you want to swap to a different identity provider, it's as simple as changing one line of code. So I'm going to switch now to. Let's use Azure AD to B2C for authentication. All the configuration parameters I need for that are sitting in my config file.
All right, cool.
There's all those things that you saw in the dialog box. They're already there.
This is nice also because it's a reminder of transparency. You enter a bunch of stuff in a dialog box. You're like, where does that go? It goes in the config that we talked about at the beginning.
Okay.
Not trying to hide anything.
I just refreshed the app. It rebuilt itself. Sign in. And now... I just changed one line of code. Did you see where the login is coming from?
It's the big clip art image that we're impressed with.
Yeah, I know. It's like, where did that image go? Notice, this is not me anymore. This is Azure AD B2C.
Handling the login
Doing social login. They have, you know, forgot my password already wired up, and I just log in here again. None of this UI is in my app. You notice it's got all these images and stuff. That's just showing that you can customize this thing to look exactly like your app so that it fits in. You can change the CSS and all that jazz. And boom, we're now logged in with Azure AD B2C. So I just ripped out all the identity code from my template by deleting a folder.
And now you're not responsible for managing all of that information.
It's handled. And you know, the beautiful thing is it's not just Azure AD B2C. It's any compliant OpenID Connect provider.
Okay. Like so you had said it's easy to swap out. How do we swap out something that's completely different?
So let me
maybe even not us.
So yeah, so let me show you like in the file new project, remember when we did auth?
Right. You said auth.
There were all those options. that's stealing my thunder just for a second.
Web app.
So notice at the bottom here, there's this learn more about third party open source authentication options. Because the community has built a bunch of these things that support OpenID Connect, and they're great. Like if you click on this link, you'll find out about, you know, identity server and OpenID Addict or you know, any of these third party open source options. You might want to use one of these. I'm going to actually now swap this app to use identity server.
Right.
It supports OpenID Connect.
And a bunch of other cool stuff.
And actually, they have .NET new templates for identity server. And even better, because the same template engine is used in VS as is used on the command line, they can actually get their templates like right in here. Like here are the identity server 4.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Identity server 4 templates. So I created one of these and put it in my app.
Nice.
Let's use it. So let's pop out of here. Okay, so then go back.
Sorry, I'm so obsessive about the zooming.
It's important. I gotta see it.
The people in the second row appreciate it.
I have an existing project that I've been hiding from you. It's in identity swap, identity server.
The finale.
Okay, and then I gotta get it going because it's its own process. It's a separate app now. So let's see.
Because identity server, this third party identity server, sits kind of off to the side and it's the one. So instead of going and logging into Azure or logging into my local stuff, we're going to have this second thing that sits next to us there that swaps it out, just like we saw in the slides. Okay, so localhost on one port, you're on 44 or something.
Okay, and
that's identity server.
My app is over here. I'm 44316.
Okay.
So let me now go back, and it's not gonna let me change the code because I started debugging. Isn't that right? Let me stop and run it again. So I'm gonna swap out B to C now. And now I'm just going to use this add web app authentication method is just saying use just generic OpenID Connect authentication.
Right, which identity server then
which
supports.
Which is pointing at OpenID identity server. Okay, so now I changed that line. So this guy's good. Let's start the, let's make sure we've got identity swap running. All right.
Yep.
I'm going to start it again. And then let's get identity server running. Start that guy.
Is this really going to work?
So
it
cool.
better work because it's the finale.
Okay, so let's sign out. Sign out here. Pressure. Pressure.
We're only 30 seconds over right now.
Oh, no, come on.
You are logged out.
Okay, so
all right,
hold on. That's
identity server was logging
out. There's a little cross contamination with my cookies.
So here's your app.
Here's my app.
Sign in.
Boom.
Identity server.
Oh.
Nice. There we go.
Microsoft.
Now they're handling that work for us, and they could then log us into Google or whatever. So you have your choice of local or third-party local or external local, and he just made that work. So he used identity
one
server
line of code change.
That you can check out at identityserver.com or Azure AD B2C that
that's
you can
right.
say really fast, Azure AD B2C. And that's awesome as well. So that is ASP.NET Core 2.0. You can go and get those bits. We did not put the URL. We put TBD. Don't go there. Don't go to TBD. I don't know what's there. So I'm going to go and get that off the screen very quickly. Go to .NET, which he is going to bring up on our lower, because again, we paid for it and nobody goes there. So you got to use .NET or Microsoft.NET. That's too hard. That's why I bought the domain.
There you go. That's the right one.
Go check it out. .NET Core Preview. This is what's coming. This is the direction that we're going. We hope that you enjoy using it and have as much fun as we had making it for you. Thank you very much.
Hey, everyone.